He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Make sure you follow us on social media at Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101 on Twitter. You can find us at the 73rd Hole. And on Instagram, it's just 73rd Hole. So make sure you head over there and check us out. We have got a special episode for you today as we welcome Oklahoma legend Craig Humphreys to the show. Craig, great to have you on today.
Hey, Colby, I appreciate it. I don't think I'm really a legend, but I got to say that I am honored beyond. Colby's always been respected as one of the top young media rising stars in the market. And, Colby, I think we got to say, your man Taylor Williams, I know him as T-Dub, but Sam used to play a lot of golf with Taylor Williams, my son Sam. But I want people out there to realize Taylor Williams, two-time 5A state champion when he was at Chickasha, won a playoff, Taylor, four-hole playoff over Casey Fernandez at Emerald Falls. But that was a playoff that Taylor Gooch, who's on the PGA Tour, missed by one shot. So, Taylor, it's got to be nice to have bragging rights over a guy that's on the PGA Tour, right?
Yes, Craig. Thank you for definitely shouting me out there. I really appreciate that. It means a lot. And you know, me and...
And then the next year, Colby, he wins by 12 shots, kind of a Tiger-like performance where he wins by 12 shots at a great course, Dornick Hills and Ardmore. So I want people to realize the golf greatness that we're surrounded by here, Colby.
Yeah, I was in that field at Dornick Hills as well, and Taylor, he went so low. The condition, it was 25-mile-an-hour plus winds, and the rest of us were just, I mean, we were fighting for our lives. And then we get in at the end of the day, and we see what Taylor shot. And everybody was just, I mean, kind of confused, honestly, because it didn't seem like those numbers were out there. But yeah, Taylor, I know you had a good story about playing with Sam the first time you and Craig met, actually, back in the day.
Yeah, it was a real interesting story, and I still tell it to this day. And Craig may not even remember this. I actually played my very first tournament when I was 11 years old down at Duncan Country Club. And the tournament's called the Hodaback after, I believe his name was Darren Hodaback, passed away in a car accident, but was a great, great junior player. So they named the tournament after him. And the second day of the tournament, I played with Craig's son, Sam, who is a very great golfer, currently was playing at UMKC before all the cancellations and stuff happened. But one of the great things to just kind of show Craig's character and how great of a person he is. So on the second day that we were playing, when I first played with Sam, it was a monsoon. I mean, we're talking 30-mile-an-hour winds, rain's coming down. I don't even know how we even still played. And so, you know, me being my first tournament, we were very unprepared for these conditions. Only had one umbrella, no extra socks, you know, no towels, anything like that. And I remember this day on, like, the walking up the first hole when it was raining like this, Craig handed me like two or three towels for me to keep underneath my umbrella so that I could keep my grips dry and do all those things. And you know, I didn't know who Craig was at this time. You know, I didn't know he was a big radio star. And even though he doesn't want to admit it, he truly is a legend around these parts. So, you know, just to that showed a lot to me about how that golf is so much about character and integrity and all that. And that's just something that's really stuck with me even to this day.
Well, some great memories, junior golf, right, T-Dub?
Oh, so many. And you know, it's great that, you know, we were able to make these relationships that we have now and able to, you know, still, you know, talk about these great things and still have these great personal relationships even after all this as well.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, hey, I also want to say before we get started, I'm a big fan of the show. I love you guys doing this. A lot of people have been after me for years to do a golf show and so forth. And we've done a few, I mean, over the years with Andy Dillard and so forth. And Jim Woodward comes on with me from the majors and things like that. But to really have a regular show that we can go to on a regular basis, the 73rd Hole, I mean, that you guys are doing a tremendous job. I've listened to every one of them, doing a great, great job.
Well, we appreciate that, Craig. And by the way, Craig's talking about having people on with him. Craig hosts a radio show here in Oklahoma City on the Sports Animal, 98.1, the Sports Animal. And Craig, you're kind of known as the golf guy around. Whenever people, you know, the majors roll around, Augusta rolls around, people want to listen to one of the local guys talk golf. They turn over to the Sports Animal and they listen to you on 98.1. So I know I appreciate being able to listen to somebody who has covered golf for so long and knows the game so well, because you know this as well as anybody. In local sports talk radio, what happens a lot of time is the Masters rolls around and then you have a bunch of guys who know a lot about football that start talking golf. So I appreciate getting to turn on your show and listen to a guy who knows a lot about golf talk about golf. That's what I like.
Well, that's why I like to listen to the 73rd Hole, because you guys obviously know what you're talking about. And you guys keep up with it far better than I do right now, to be honest with you. And especially when you get into all the betting angles and so forth on a weekly basis. I heard you breaking down Jordan Spieth's game last week and his swing. And you guys, I mean, with all the numbers you're throwing out there, right misses, left misses, had it down to ball position. But you guys are doing a great job with your player profiles. I've always been known as a numbers guy, Colby. And I know baseball is a sport of numbers, but golf is a sport of numbers too, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Especially in this day of all the analytics. There's far more analytics with golf now than we've ever had. But anyway, now, hey, it's a great game, humbling game. Even guys as good as Taylor can tell you. I mean, every day out there, I mean, you can, you know, have a day where it seems like you've got this game figured out, and then the next game, it's a whole different story.
And happens way too many times,
game, right?
That's why it's a great game, no doubt about it. You know, obviously this year everything is weird in the world of golf. You've been to Augusta. When was the last time you didn't take a trip to Augusta, Georgia in April?
That would have been 1987.
So I mean, this has to be weird for you. What are you doing now? Going stir crazy with no golf, no trip to Augusta on the calendar in a couple weeks?
I was telling Taylor yesterday that normally it's this time of year where it's like I'm cramming, Colby, to get ready for the Masters, you know. And I watch all the tournaments. I mean, leading up, especially, you know, when you get to the Florida Swing, and I watch the tournaments every week. But what I'm saying, I do my homework that way. But the final couple of weeks, you know, you're trying to break it down and break down the current form of every player and so forth, and do your homework again on the golf course and things like that. And, you know, Dusty was talking today on our show. Dusty Dvorak was talking about getting a golf magazine in the mail, golf magazine with Tiger on the cover and their Masters preview. And I got that last week and I was digging into it. And then I had to remind myself, wait a second, we're not going to have a Masters cover this April. But no, the last time I didn't go was 87. And, you know, my first Masters, 1988. I was invited by a guy named Marsh Pittman, and he had worked on the commodities exchange in Chicago with a guy named Johnny Musso, who was known as the Italian Stallion, played football for Bear Bryant at Alabama, later played for the Chicago Bears. But anyway, Marsh called me up and said, hey, we got Masters badges. Would you like to go to Augusta? I said, of course. And they had it lined up. We were going to play golf at Shoal Creek in Birmingham on Thursday.
That's an awesome golf course.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Go to Augusta Friday and Saturday. And then Musso had a sports writer friend that got me a badge for Sunday. So I went Friday, Saturday, Sunday in 88, first time I ever went to Augusta. And I've been, 32 in a row now. I mean, this would be 33 this year, I think. But that was my first, and I'll never forget it. And that's the thing, Colby, I love, and I heard you mentioned on one of your shows that you still haven't been to Augusta. But I love going to Augusta National with someone who's never been there and just watching them experience it for the first time. And I know the first time I did, I mean, I made a beeline for the number 10 tee box, because at that time we didn't even really see any of the front nine. I know in later years they added, you know, they would pick it up at number 6 or 7 or that type of thing. And now, you know, we do get, you know, full coverage on certain days. But still, at that time, we knew the back nine, right? I mean, we knew every hole backward and forward. I don't care if you've ever been there or not. And just, I'll never forget going to number 10, and this was Friday of the 88 tournament, and just walking down, to me, it's still the best walk in golf, walking down that number 10 fairway. Huge hill. That's where TV flattens it out. Hills like, you know, 10 and 18 are on the same hill, two and number eight, two par fives on the front on the same hill. But walking down number 10 with the pine trees on either side, with the huge bunker out in the fairway, and it was just, I was in heaven. And then you get to Amen Corner, and you get the holes like number 16, which is maybe my favorite hole. I mean, if I just had to park myself in one spot, it might be at number 16 at Augusta National. You know, there's nothing like your first visit there, right?
Yeah, it's at the very top of my bucket list. This past summer, I was fortunate enough to go out to Pebble Beach for the first time. Sunday at the U.S. Open, my wife and I took a vacation to San Francisco and drove down the coast to Pebble on Sunday. And it was, I mean, it was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And, you know, I can imagine going to Augusta National, especially as a golf fan. And I would imagine that it would never get old either. You mentioned going with a first timer, but even as many times as you've been, I imagine it never gets old to see the perfection, the little slice of heaven that is Augusta National the second weekend in April.
It never gets old. It really doesn't. People would say, well, you've seen it all time after time after time. No, it doesn't. It never gets old to walk over to the par three course, and that is a whole different course if people don't realize. But just to be – heck, Kobe, I would love to be a member of the par three course, T-Dub, and just get to play that every day, you know, right? I mean, it's an unbelievable little par three course, but no, it definitely never gets old. That was my first time to go in 1988, and the very next year I had no connections. I wasn't planning on going, and I'm sitting in my office at the time, and I get a call from Steve Cromwell, who was a good college player, played at LSU under Bill Brogdon, the coach that later went on to, you know, ORU and Tulsa had great success, but Cromwell played for him in the mid-70s at LSU, but he was working with Devon Energy. His boss had come in, you know, again, this is Tuesday of Masters Week, and said, Steve, I know you love golf. I got these two trophy room badges. You know, we're not going to be able to use them at the last second. You know, you're welcome to these if you want them. Well, Cromwell called me. I said, you got the badges. I'll get us a hotel room. I think I found us a room like at the Days Inn for like $100 a night, which was a fortune back in those days, in 89. But anyway, we got down there Wednesday night, went to the tournament all the way through. That was 1989, and Faldo, of course, winning that year over Scott. Remember when Scott Hoke missed the short putt at number 10 and extended the playoff to number 11, and Faldo wins it, kind of a cold, rainy Masters that week. But I was spoiled, had trophy room badges for that one. So after two, Colby, as a guest, I was hooked. And so I made my plans to go down in 1990. And so I was talking with a buddy of mine, Jerry Myers, who loves golf even more than I do. So we decided we were going to put an ad in the Augusta Chronicle to try to get Masters badges. And so I found a guy that was going to sell me two badges for $550 apiece for the whole tournament. And we worked it out, and he would send the badges and I would send the money after I knew they were on the way. And we made the switch, and I got my package and I opened it up, and it was a bunch of toilet paper with a picture of Spuds McKenzie, the old Budweiser dog or whatever.
Oh, my. Oh, no.
Anyway, I was taken for $1,100 total.
Oh.
And I got with the Richmond County Sheriff's Department and so forth. Anyway, long story short, I got taken for $1,100 on that one. That was the 1990 Masters. I somehow think the good Lord has been paying me back ever since because little did I know I was going to get to go to 32 straight of them. And that year, my second strategy for that year after the Augusta Chronicle ad was, I thought at that time, you know, you could go to the practice rounds back in those days for, it was like $5 for Monday, 10 for Tuesday, and 15 for Wednesday on the par three day, something like that. Now,
that's,
that was in 1990.
That is insane.
And I think that might have been the last year, or if it wasn't, 91. I mean, that ended in the very early 90s. You know, somewhere between 90 and 92, the ticket booths outside for the par three ended. They already had a waiting list for the badges, for the what they call the series badges, for the real tournament. But Anyway, my strategy, I thought, I'm going to go down there and get badges for the par three and just walk around, talk to as many people as I can, and just find out where they got their badges and so forth. And that's how I met some good buddies that worked the scoreboard at the time. And I won't give their names because I don't want to get in any trouble with Augusta National. But anyway, they became good friends, still good friends to this day. Many of them, there's one that's retired, but most of them still work in the scoreboards at Augusta National. This would have been the 30th anniversary of where I met them. But anyway, they helped me. You know, they get their own badge and then a patron's badge that they can use for a wife or a friend. And they allowed me, you know, one guy might have a badge, extra badge for Thursday, another one for Saturday, that type of thing over the years. But I went for a number of years, guys, seriously. One time I bought a badge for a golf course superintendent. And again, this is back in 1990. That I met the guy on Thursday, bought a golf course superintendent badge in the parking lot across from Augusta National. So I was golf course superintendent for the final 3 days. But that was before they had the UPC codes and put it through the computer. Right. That was just like a string tag that said the guy's name and golf course superintendent from Florida. One year I went up to the first tee, so I Sam Snead is hitting the opening tee shot. And so after the opening tee shot, his caddy, who was Randy Soul, was the guy's name. They called him the Soul Man, well-known caddy for Sam Snead. So I went up to Randy Soul and said, "Hey, you got any line on any other badges? You know, any friends that have a badge?" He goes, "You know what? I do. I got a local caddy I know that has an extra badge." He goes, "Meet me behind the scoreboard, the big scoreboard to the right of number one." He goes, "Meet me behind that scoreboard in 15 minutes. And he did, and I won't mention the caddy's name, but anyway, I bought a badge from the local caddy for the rest of that tournament for the final 3 days, and I actually got in for, a couple of years with that caddy's badge until one day that caddy lost his badge. I mean, one day he was caught selling a badge, the caddy was. And they were looking for his other one because the caddy got a badge and then a patron's badge. And, of course, I had his other badge because he had sold it to me. And, and the funny story, back in those days, okay, so I started doing the radio in the fall of 92. So 93 Masters is my first Masters doing radio reports. And I was just paying my way down there, buying tickets, getting in any way I could. And then I'd go to the payphone. That's the only way we could do it, just on a payphone. And so I'm doing reports like with Bob Berry Jr., and I've got a line of people waiting to use the phone, and I'm doing my reports. And
so,
I'm
so you had just like regular people just waiting to call their friends and family, and you're doing like a 10, 15-minute radio here.
Yes, that is correct, Toby, yes. And so this is either 93 or 94, I pin it down to. I think it's 94. I'm at the phone box just to the right of the number 8 tee box. And I'm doing my report with BBJ. And as I'm doing the report with BBJ, a golf cart comes, pulls up with men dressed in coat and tie. I can tell they're officials. And they are just standing looking at me. I've got my caddy badge on, with his name that I won't say. But anyway, and they're just waiting patiently. And I'm doing my report with BBJ. And as soon as I get finished, they said, "Sir, can you step to the side over here?" And they started questioning me where I got the badge from and how much I paid. And basically, they ushered me to the golf cart, and I was being ushered out of Augusta National.
You got kicked out of Augusta.
Yes, I got kicked out. And the ironic thing is one of my scoreboard buddies, they used to go sit behind the number 2 green early in the day until their time on the scoreboard later in the day. But they were with my wife over sitting behind 2 green, but one of them had gone over to use the restroom over by right by those that phone bank at number 8. And he saw all this taking place, saw me getting questioned and put into the golf cart. And he runs over to Bev and says, "Bev, look over there at that golf cart. They're hauling your husband out of here." And so these guys used to camp out by the fire station across from Augusta National across Washington Road. That's where they had a camper, and they would park it back there. And anyway, one of their buddies had been out late the night before and I think was in trouble with his wife. And anyway, make a long story short, they told Bev, they said, go find Craig. And they said, we think there's an extra badge at the fire station. If the guy hadn't picked it up by noon, well, then tell him, you know, tell the people at the fire station, we said it's okay for Craig to pick it up. And so I did. I went to the fire station. The badge was there. I was back in within the hour. and they were making bets with their buddies. They said, you don't know this guy. This guy will be back in within the hour. And I was. But anyway, but no, seriously, back in those days, I would hold up. I would go after the round was over. I would hold up the back of a pizza box. I had written, in fact, I still got it here in my study, but the back of a pizza box that said, golf fan from Oklahoma, please need one badge. That's what I would hold up out on Washington Road. And sometimes it worked that, you know, that year, one year I got this guy pulls over in a Mercedes from, he was a Florida State alum. They were big Azinger fans and so forth. And you know, and this was a badge for the Sunday of that year, one of the years back, you know, early 90s. And they asked me where I was staying. They said, we're going to come by your hotel and pick you up tonight. We're going to take you out for a drink and just talk to you and you know, kind of check you out. Basically, I was interviewing to see if I was worthy of buying their badge. You know, they wanted to make sure I wasn't going to get them in any trouble. And we went out and had a great talk. And anyway, that's how I went to the badge the Sunday of the Masters that year. So anyway, I've been a golf course superintendent, a caddy. One year I saw an employee. I had an employee's badge. The only time I ever saw one like it was a restroom attendant. So I guess I've been a restroom attendant. But people think I've had this plus job getting to go to the Masters all these years on some media pass. But really, my media pass, I would go, Colby, the first 5 years I had that I was doing my radio reports, 93, 4, 5, 6, 7, I would go into the media center every year begging for a press pass, basically. And they were very nice to me, but basically they would say, go away, boy, you're too small. But they did let me, finally, the last couple of years, 96, 7, they were letting me use the outdoor bank of phones on the side of the media center that were behind the hedges that only media could use. So at least I wouldn't have to hold up a line of fans at that point. But anyway, finally in 1998, I won't bore people with my tales of the old Sports Talk 1340, that we started a little competing radio station, which we didn't even own a signal. I mean, we were just leasing time, from KXY here in Oklahoma City. And we started, you know, we're on from in the, August of 95, about the time Sam was born. We would come on. Started from 1 to 6, and then, you know, we went from 11 until 7. And then after a year, our advertisers, things were going well. We had good ratings. Advertisers were wanting to be on in morning drive time as well as evening. So we started going 6 in the morning till 7 at night. Then we'd go off and it was, you know, Mexican music being played, you know, because they were leasing the time after we went off. But anyway, had no signal sale. We sold our package in January of 98 to what became the Sports Animal, is to Caribou, became the Sports Animal 6 months later when they added WWLS and Al and BBJ and so forth. And so I was able to call Augusta National in early 98, January, February. I called them up. I said, hey, we now have a statewide network. And we really did. We were on in, you know, Tulsa, Enid, Woodward, Lawton. I mean, we had a statewide network. They said, put it to us in writing. We think we can get you a pass. And I got my media credential in 1998. And somehow I'm still there. And they do not let, they aren't handing out credentials to radio stations. I don't care if you're the ticket in Dallas or, I mean, there is WFAN in New York and there's us. And then it's all national networks and worldwide networks. So somehow I'm still there.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That is quite a feat, Craig. And you know, like you said, you've been mentioning you've been going there since 1988, 1988. And you know, just going through looking at some of these winners and some of these other events, it seems like, you know, almost every single Masters, there's, you know, one major storyline that happens, you know, whether it be, you know, in 2001, Tiger winning four majors in a row to complete to complete the Tiger Slam, which in my opinion is one of the most underappreciated accomplishments in sports. And you have 2004, Phil winning his first major for however long we had been waiting for it. We had the Kenny Perry choke in 2009 when Angel Cabrera won. Adam Scott finally broke through in 2015 or in 2013. And then obviously we had Sergio breakthrough in 2017, and then Tiger with the best comeback in all the sports happened last year. So even with all of these, you know, great Masters that have happened with all these storylines, which one do you feel like was your favorite to be at, and what were some other particular reasons as to why it was?
Okay, I was looking at this the other day doing my homework for this show, and so I wrote down the 32 that I've been to, all right, starting in 88 with Sandy Lyle with the 7-iron out of the fairway bunker, 1988. I was standing on some guy's chair behind the green, and I think they actually broke the chair, but I my memory is that I paid him. I hope I did.
we'll assume you did.
Yeah.
But that's the true story. That's where I was in the 88, right behind the green when Lyle hit that 7-iron out of the fairway bunker to beat Count by one. But like Taylor says, that's the thing I love about Augusta National, Colby, right, is it seems to deliver just about every year.
Yeah.
It delivers. Going back, the last two before I went were Nicklaus in 86, and then the Mize chip in to beat Norman, you know, in 87. And then it just keeps going on and on. And so I ranked my top 10 just since 88. These are the top 10 Masters that I've seen. Obviously, if you were going to rank the Masters of all time, I think you'd have to rank Jack in 86. Still, his greatest Tiger has been, I mean, there's nothing to top that one, right? Is Jack in 86.
And it would be tough to find, especially with how incredible that back nine was, even for us, you know, what is it now, almost 40 years later, to be able to go back and look on it. And you know, just even the chills that we get watching it is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Jack in 86 and then Tiger in 19, obviously both for their own different historic reasons. But right. Anyway, your top 10 since 88. Well, I love that you made a top 10 list.
Okay, here's my top 10. And so I'm sorry if your take, if you want to say best performance, we did a deal with Pat Jones today, you know, best individual performance that we've seen with our own eyes. And I had to say Tiger in 97, best individual performance that I've ever seen. But as far as the win that meant the most to me, and not just because of my bet with Traver,
So anybody who's not from Oklahoma, Craig Humphreys had a bet with a guy at his radio station for years. Guy said Tiger would never win another major, and the guy he had the bet with went on and on for years about how Craig should just pay up and it's a ridiculous bet. And then Tiger breaks through and wins. So a little backstory on that.
Yeah, the bet was made in 2010 or 2011, somewhere around that range.
It was made. I hate to keep telling these long stories and get off track here.
These are great. Fantastic.
This one was made in August of 2011. All right? August of 2011. So, just to keep it in context, I mean, you know, the fire hydrant came in 2009, right?
Yeah, Thanksgiving 2009.
Yeah, 2009. The great win at Torrey Pines was 2008. You know, he's lost to Y.E. Yang 2009 PGA. I mean, the fire hydrant comes in the fall of 2009, Thanksgiving of 2009. Well, then, remember his comeback was at the Masters in 2010. Well, then, remember at the 2011 Masters, he had a swing under the Eisenhower tree. Remember, he'd hit the Eisenhower tree, mm-hmm. And he was, hurt himself. And just was not right, and he tried to come back. Remember, he tried to make it back for the, Open Championship and the PGA, Taylor. But anyway, he played just horrible in the PGA and at Firestone, the World Golf Championship, Firestone, where he's won so many times. So he was just horrible. He tried to come back too soon from an injury, and so Traver said, he's done. He'll never win again. He's done. Never win another major, I mean. Well, and so I said, well, he's not done. He's just injured. You know, and so the bet was made in August of 2011. Well, he quickly bounced back to win three times in 2012. And 2013, he won five times. He was back to number one in the world.
Player of the year as well, yeah.
And quite frankly,
Player of the year.
he should have won the Masters had he not hit the flag stick on 15 and then had the viewer call in about the drop. It was a complete disaster, but that's beside the point.
Thank you very much, Kobe. I heard you guys talking about that on your show the other day. Anyway, but as Kobe said, I mean, this abuse, and it was abuse that I took on the air for, you know, 7 long years. I mean, going
nearly
from,
a decade.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was screaming matches.
Well, it was part of the open of his show and so forth. Greatest wager ever made on this planet or any other. and the texts that I was receiving from him on a regular basis were even far worse that I don't want to share. But anyway, but the point is that this bet had taken a life of its own, to say the least. And then Tiger, so help me out, guys. So it's 2017 when he makes his comeback at the Hero World Challenge after he's finally had the fusion surgery. So at the end of
he finished
2017. Nine. Okay, end of 2017. After, guys, he was ranked number 11. No kidding. I mean, dead serious. He was ranked number 1199 in the world at the time I made this bet. On the day I made the bet, he was 1199 in the world. He had risen up to 600 something by the end of the year because of his performance in the Hero World Challenge. But anyway, but Tiger he had hit some like 340 yard drive, and you know, Traber is saying it's an exhibition. People are making so much of this, acting like he's back just because he hit one. And I said, 340 is 340. And so Traber, this is by text, you know, and Traber says, so you want to make another bet on if he'll ever win? And I said, you know, any tournament, not just another major bet, but any tournament. And Traber says, well, it has to be a PGA, an official PGA Tour event. And he was not expecting me to take it at that point, since he was number 1199, but I took it. And to me, that bet was better than the first bet. Each of them were $200 bets, but to me, I'm more proud of that one. And Tiger paid off on that one within, 9 months or so with his win at the Tour Championship, almost won the PGA of 18 we're talking about. You know, in late 18, yeah, at the end of the 18th season.
Almost won the Open and almost won the PGA.
Yes, well, had the lead on the back nine.
Yes, thank you very much. At the Open Championship and the PGA, finally, you know, closes the deal at the Tour Championship, and then he won the 2019 Masters. So, anyway, all that being said, that the 2019 Masters, it was more meaningful to me, even though the 1997, I would have to admit, is more as far as history goes and as far as the greatest performance, to shoot 18 under and win by 12 shots. Only Taylor Williams does that. Well, so anyway, I got 2019 number one. I got 97 number two. Number three on my list is 2001, because that was the Tiger Slam, and that was my first year with Westwood One, and I was actually in the, you know, radio booth and, you know, on number 18 during much of that tournament, on the call for part of that. And so that meant a lot to me, just to go from holding the pizza box to being, you know, in the power on 18. But Tiger shooting minus 16, 16 under, wins by two over David Duvall. I got that number three. I got Mickelson's first win, number four, because Mickelson was another guy they said would never win a major.
Yeah, and that was an incredible shootout with Ernie Els as well.
Ernie Els, unbelievable.
He had two eagles on Sunday.
Els has a great round. I'll never forget looking over there at Ernie Els on the putting green, and he's just, you know, crestfallen, because, I mean, he thought he had won the Masters, and Mickelson storms through the back nine and wins by one, as Taylor said, at minus nine. Not real low scoring that year, but great play on Sunday by those guys. So I got Mickelson number four. I got Sergio winning in 2017 number five for much the same reason. I mean, it had grown to the point. I mean, Sergio had burst onto the scene in, 1999,
he ran up the hill at Medina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Medina, thank you. And so now we're to 2017, and Sergio still hadn't won a major. And so he wins in that playoff over Justin Rose. But, I mean, just, I don't know, I was pulling for Sergio. I mean, the guy had been through so much, still a great player. So that's number five. Six, I got Fred Couples, 92, the year Bev and I got married. She was a huge Couples fan. I was a big Ray Floyd fan.
Craig, how did that ball stay up on 12?
How did it stay on the bank, Kobe? I mean, seriously. I mean, I've never seen it before or since, but somehow, because that is a steep bank, and Couples, beats my man Ray Floyd by two shots. So Bev's guy wins that one in 92 with Fred Couples. Number seven, I got Ben Crenshaw, 1995. Another great, and this is a 25-year anniversary of that one. Crenshaw winning by one over Davis Love III on the week that their teacher, Harvey Penick, Crenshaw's
true legend, and Harvey Penick. Yeah, that was a very legend, huge deal.
And he had been really somewhat of a mentor for Davis Love's dad, Davis Love II, and had even given Davis Love III some lessons, but was the mentor for Tom Kite and Ben Crenshaw. Well, anyway, he dies that week, Sunday before the Masters, whatever, and then Crenshaw and Kite bury him on Wednesday, the day before the tournament, and Crenshaw gets back to Augusta, and Carl Jackson helps him find something, his caddy helps him find something on the range. He hadn't been in good form, and he just, this is what we're talking about, why golf is so great, and Crenshaw pulls it together, shoots 14 under, beats Davis Love III of all people by one shot in the 95 Masters. That was a great one 25 years ago. That's number seven. Number eight is, you guys mentioned Adam Scott. Another great story on a guy who had won the Players, but, had waited so long for his major, and a guy that seemed tailor-made to win a Masters, like your Greg Normans or Ernie Els, that never won one. It looked like Adam Scott might fall in the same group, but he wins in 2013 playoff over Cabrera. That was number eight. Number nine on the list, Jordan Spieth in 2015 by four over Rose and Mickelson, and he ties Tiger's record at 18 under.
Missed a short putt on 18 to set the record. I was rooting way against him to miss that.
I wanted him to miss. I did not want him to finish at 19.
Well, a great breakdown, by the way, on Spieth. That's just incredible that he's fallen to 56 in the world. But anyway, still, what he did in 15 is just incredible. And then he goes on to win the U.S. Open and contention at the British. But that's number nine. Number 10, I got Bubba Watson. 2012.
Yeah, from the trees.
From the trees. We didn't have to do a wrap-up that night. I think there was a Thunder game or whatever on that Sunday night in 2012. So when it went to a playoff, I thought, I'm going to go out and watch this. I was in the media center and went out, and I'm about 50 yards back up the fairway behind him along the ropes, and you see this ball come out of the woods and all of a sudden make a right turn and go. It's on the green. It's just incredible. Hooked pitching wedge, whatever, from Bubba Watson. And that's another famous spot where they will probably have a plaque. They don't yet, but Bubba out of the trees in 2012. But anyway, we could go on and on, but that's my top 10 of the ones I've been to over the last 32 years. But like Taylor said, it just produces on a yearly basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And that 2012 you mentioned, that playoff was against Louis. That was the same year that he made the double eagle on the second hole, which was really cool because it essentially died right in the center of the hole, took the whole entire green, fell in. Just one of the best shots you ever see. But talking to you the other day, Craig, I think one of the more impressive things, even you've been to all these Masters, you've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to play Augusta. Now, you told me three times the other day. Tell us about that experience. Obviously, what is it like to get to play it as opposed to just seeing it, and tell us about kind of the process and how you got to play it, because I thought it was really interesting.
Well, I got to play it because of media lottery. Now I might say that, like my buddies that work the scoreboard and my buddies like Brad Bowen at Golf USA and so forth, Jeremiah, the guys there that have been marshalling for years, for people that give up a week of their time, like marshals and like your scoreboard operators and so forth, what Augusta National does is right before they shut down at the end of every May, maybe the last week in May, whatever, they will have those guys down there and maybe have a day, one day for the scoreboard guys, one day for the marshals and so forth. And they can play both the big course and play the par three, and Augusta National. Now, three times I got to play it, I didn't get to play the par three. The media doesn't get to. So I would love to play the par three someday. But I played it three times. It's a media lottery. The first time was 1999. My second year that I had a media pass, a press credential, was 1999. And I got to play it that year. And then And then after that, it used to be a once in a lifetime deal for media members. But I guess we all started getting so old, most of them had played it. And so shortly after I played my first time in 99, somewhere in the early 2000s, they made a new rule and said, now the rule is that you can get back into the lottery 7 years after you last played. So I played in 99, so I got back in the lottery 2006. I got chosen again in 2008. And so that was my second Masters, the time that my second time to play the course.
And now you play it the day after, right? You play it on Monday.
You play it the day after. Monday morning.
So do you travel with your clubs every year that you're in the lottery?
Well, that's another good point, Colby, because they tell you that if, you know, it's your job. You cannot rent clubs from Augusta National, so it's your job either to bring your clubs or to find clubs. But if you don't play, if you get chosen in the lottery and don't play, you're considered to have played, and you're, you know, it's another 7 years.
You don't want that to happen. Oh, my Lord. That would be terrible.
And 1 year, interesting that you mentioned that, Colby, because 1 year I went to, so I thought, where am I going to get clubs? And I, you know, went to some, called a golf course or two, and I thought, well, let me go to this driving range. Maybe they rent clubs at a driving range. And I went to this range, and the guy at the range rented me his clubs. You know, I say rented. I think he might have just let me use them. And in fact, interesting story that when I was working with Westwood One, we would either have media lotteries or a lot of times just being with Westwood One, we would, have some connection where we could play the course the day after. And one time it was Oakmont in 2007 U.S. Open. And it was a situation where I had to go find some clubs, and I went to a range, and there was this guy on the range that actually, let me use his club. Just a random guy up there hitting golf balls.
That's
and
awesome.
So forth. And we exchanged information and so forth. But yeah, you got to come up with, you know, with the golf clubs. And there have been some years I used to take my clubs down there the first few times. I think the first time I won it, I think Bev shipped them down there on Delta Airlines or whatever overnight, and I got them for the next day. But no, there's nothing like it. Then I got to play it again in 17 a few years ago. First two times we went off 10. Last time I went off number one. Like Toby says, the pins are the same. You know, everything's the same. They do not let you play the tournament tees. There is no way I would want to play the tournament tees. Augusta National only has two sets of tees. They got the tournament tees and they got the member tees. So anyway,
how'd you play?
No,
do you have any good rounds to your credit at Augusta?
No, I do not. back in my day, I mean, the best I ever was in golf is like, 8 to 10 handicap, probably about a 9 handicap when I was really playing a lot of golf, you know, like 30 years ago, whatever. But, you know, now I don't even have an established handicap. I kind of got the bug this last year and played more like in the evenings just with Bev or by myself and so forth, and started playing better, you know, a little better than I have in years. But I was never great. I'd probably be like a 14 handicap now, something like that. But the first two times I played, I shot 92. This last time in 2017, I really had, I had three birdies and shot an 88, and I was proud of that.
Which holes did you birdie?
The last time. This last time, I definitely birdied 8. Let's see. I birdied 8 and 17 and... Let's see. I did not birdie 2. 8, 17, and I want to say 7. 7, 8, 17.
Seven
and three that I birdied.
No, those are all good holes to birdie for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, 17 is really good birdie.
8's a pretty easy. 17 was the one I was proud of because I had to hit like a 5-wood. I had hit it in the right rough and somehow hit a 5-wood that barely clears the front bunker and funnels on back there. And I've got like a, 10-footer or so at 17. But those holes have changed a lot over the years too. From the first time I played it to the times, you know, that, like 2017, for instance, I know, a lot of renovations in 2002 and 2006 and
I think they had another one in 2011 as well. I'm not sure how extensive it was, but 2002, 2006, and 2011 were the main noted years where they made significant changes. No,
hey, it's a different golf course now, right? I mean, it's much more of a ball striker's golf course. It used to be more of a putting contest. Still, you got to be able to putt at Augusta National. I mean, there's no question. But I'm just saying that the holes that have been affected the most, I would say, number one, I mean, in 2002, they moved it back 20, 25 yards, and then 2006 moved it back another 15, 20 yards. Guys used to just blow it over the right fairway bunker and have a little, you know, it was driver sand wedge or pitching wedge or whatever, very short iron. Now they're driving it. Now it's a much tighter holes with the trees on the left side, the bunker being expanded, and then now you're driving it into the face of the hill at times, and you're ended up with closer to a mid-iron shot there. Two is they moved the tees back in 99, 20, 25 yards. You know, five is one where they moved that fairway bunker about 80 yards towards the green and deepened it, and it's just much more of a factor on that hole now on number five. That was in 2003 that they did that. I would say of all the changes, 7 and 17 might have been affected the most, because 7 was just, it was a hole that you either hit, you could hit a 3-iron off the tee or a 3-wood at the most. But it was just, it was either an iron or a fairway wood and then a wedge, right?
Yeah, I believe it was like 350 or 360, and now it plays about 450.
You're right, Taylor. They moved it back 40 to 45 yards in 2002, another 35 to 40 yards in 2006, all right? Well, now that is a totally different hole on number 7. And then, again, on 17, much the same. I mean, 17, they moved it back, 25 yards in 99, and then, you know, moved another 10 or 15 yards, 2006, plus then the Eisenhower tree was removed in 2014 off 17. But I'm just saying 17 was a hole you looked at coming down the stretch that was kind of a birdie hole. It used to be. Well, it's still possible to make a birdie, but it's not the birdie hole that it used to be. And then I would say that 15, remember the,
Yeah, 15, I remember. I was watching 97 highlights the other day, and Tiger was going driver wedge into 15 in 97. And last year, he went driver 4-iron into 15.
That's exactly right, because they had these mounds on 15 where, it for the longer hitters, they had even more of an advantage, because if you could fly it and get it on the backside of the mounds, it would shoot forward another 30, 40 yards, whatever. Well, they reduced the fairway mounds in 99, added pine trees on the right and left in 99. Then in 2006, the Masters tees were moved back 25, 30 yards and shifted about 20 yards to the golfer's left. So it's still a birdie hole, but it's not quite, it's just not easy to hit that green in two anymore and to have a sure birdie and possible eagle. Now, it definitely brings double into play, and especially with that front left hole location at 15, you're going to see numerous doubles, I promise you, every year at the Masters. And then we got to say 18. In 2002, they moved the tees back 55 to 60 yards on 18 and moved it to the golfer's right 5 yards. Trees were added left of the fairway bunkers. Remember, like when Woozy won it, he just blew it over the fairway bunkers and there was nothing left, and you got a little sand wedge or wedge into the green. Well, 18 is not that easy anymore. And last year we saw Tiger bogey it and still win the tournament by one. But I don't know. To me, those were the holes most. Well, and then I didn't mention number 11, guys. Number 11, they moved the tees back 30, 35 yards and 5 yards to the right. Plus, then in 2004, they added 36 pine trees to the right of the fairway in 2004. It's like a force. You know, 11 used to be a hole, T-Dub, where you'd stand up and just, you know, just sling a draw off the tee box, throw it out over the trees on the right and just sling it down there. Well, now they have so many trees right and they move the tees to the right. Now it's more of a fade hole to where you almost got to hit a fade. So, but it was a tough hole anyway with the pond up by the green. And it's the hole where Hogan said, you know, if I ever miss it, you know, if I ever hit that green, I've probably pulled it, is what Hogan said.
Yeah.
if,
right.
if, if, he, you know, but because everyone bails out to the right, it's where Larry Mize chipped in, you know, to the right of number 11 Green to beat Norman in 87. But anyway, finally, in 2008, they had several trees removed from the right side of the fairway and had to widen the fairway a little because it was getting so tough. But so it's definitely changed over the years. Demands a lot more off the tee now than it used to.
Yeah, I believe you said they took out the trees in 2008. I believe 2007 might have been the year that Tiger broke his 5-iron or whatever club it was on the tree. So, you know, maybe he would hit over there a year later, he would have still had that. But I'm sure he didn't have too much of a problem getting a new one.
But then some things that haven't changed basically are the par threes. I mean, number four has always been the toughest hole out there, maybe. Long par three, number four, 12, obviously one of the great par threes in golf. You got the tees that are, you know, side by side there.
I think 12 at Augusta is the best par three in the world.
Yeah, number since 1965, they've had that tee box. I mean, no other changes to that hole since 1965 at number 12, and then number 16. You know, they've done some things to, with the pond and so forth, and the neck of the pond, and the Masters tees were extended and a little bit to the left, and this and that. But basically, it's the same hole that it was back in the early '60s at number 16. So, also some, and I think pretty much the same at number six. Right? Is it basically your distances on the par threes on 4, 6, 12, and 16 they're basically the same hole.
Yeah, they've done so much great stuff with that golf course, and that's a ton of phenomenal stories there. Craig Humphreys joining us here on the 73rd hole. You can hear Craig every day on the Sports Animal 98.1 here in Oklahoma City from 9 to noon. That was part one of our interview with Craig Humphreys here on the 73rd hole. Make sure you catch part two dropping tomorrow morning. Glad everyone was with us. Thanks for listening to the 73rd hole.